chapter 14. The book of Matthew is a bold proclamation that Jesus is King. That's the angle or the perspective of Matthew as he views Jesus. This 14th chapter, very familiar to each. I've probably preached, not necessarily all here, but 20 different messages from this chapter. It's truly one of the most remarkable and eventful chapters in all the Word of God. As you read through it, you see that it contains four main events or occurrences or happenings. But within those events, there are other events. And they're all very instructional, very insightful regarding everyday life for the child of God. What is recorded here in Matthew 14 is a revelation concerning life, more importantly, is a revelation or an unveiling of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the theme of Matthew 14. The name Jesus occurs 10 times in the chapter. The title Lord occurs 2 times. The title Son of God 1 time. And there are the pronouns referring to him. The word he appears 10 times. The word him appears 10 times. His 4 times. Me 1 time. I 1 time. Thou 2 times. Thee 1 time. So reading the chapter, you see you have a series of events, and there are 42 references to Christ in relation to these events. 42 mentions of Christ. I believe you can safely say that he's the theme of this chapter. I want to speak this morning on Jesus in the events of life. Life, of course, consists of a wide spectrum of events, wide spectrum of things that can occur, and how wonderful it is to be able to see a connection or a relationship between the event and Jesus Christ, and knowing that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now we want to read verses 25 through 27 of Matthew 14. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a spirit or a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But straightway, immediately, Jesus spake unto them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." Now we said there are four main events in this chapter. This, what we just read, takes place during the third main event of the chapter. Verse 27 basically serves as a summary of Jesus in the chapter, or Jesus in the events of life. It is I. It is I. Be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid. The message of the chapter is Jesus is all sufficient, always sufficient in all things. And then we need to hear, be of good cheer, it is I, the all-sufficient one. The message of the chapter is the supremacy and the dominion of Jesus Christ. And again, we hear those words, it is I, it is I. The message of the chapter is that Jesus Christ is the answer, He's the remedy, He is what is needed. In all four events, that was the case. And we hear Jesus in all the events of life, be of good cheer, it is I. The message of the chapter is Jesus is right for whatever is wrong. He is right. That's the message of this chapter. And whatever is wrong, we need to hear Jesus say, be of good cheer, it is I. The message of the chapter is the compassion, the care, the love of Jesus Christ. We see it all through the chapter. And again, in all the events of life, we need to hear these words, be of good cheer, it is I. So I want to look at the, basically just do a survey here of Matthew 14. Look at some of the various elements of the chapter, and then we'll make some application. It kind of does that by itself. But the main events or circumstances of the chapter, it begins with the murder of John the Baptist. That's the first main event of the chapter. We read of, and it's covered in verses 1 through verse 12. Involved in that event, there is hostile opposition to the truth. Herod opposed the message of John the Baptist, which basically was remarriage and divorce. Not basically, that was it. This hostile opposition to the truth led to persecution and the imprisonment of John the Baptist. And then, of course, it led to the eventual beheading of John the Baptist there in verse 10. And another event within that event is his burial. And we see that in verse 12. And his disciples came and took up the body, that would have been the headless body, and buried it. And as they did so, no doubt they had tremendous sorrow. No doubt they had some fear, some trepidation, some apprehension. No doubt there was some confusion in the air, and I'm sure there was anger also. John the Baptist has been beheaded. But as you read of that event and all the events within that event, it was a time of great need, no question. Secondly, there's the miraculous feeding of over 5,000 people. That's probably the best known event in the chapter. And that is covered in verses 13 through 21. And we see that multitudes of people had followed Jesus into a desert. And in verse 14, we see that Jesus healed their sick. This, of course, would only make the crowd grow. And in verse 15, as the day wears on, it's getting past mealtime, the apostles are becoming concerned, and they said unto Jesus, this is a desert place, as if he didn't know that, and the time is now past. Send the multitude away that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals. Jesus responded in verse 16, they need not depart. And then he laid upon them a humanly impossible task. He said, give ye them to eat. You feed them. That was a humanly impossible task. The apostles respond. In verse 17, we have here but five loaves and two fishes. It is not sufficient. So in that, there is a sense and there is an expression of insufficiency and inadequacy. So there's the apostles. They're in a place void of what they needed, a desert place. They are in and of themselves. They do not have what is sufficient for the demands. They are face to face with a great need, an impossibility, and a lack and an insufficiency and a meagerness and an inadequacy in their means. They are in a humanly impossible situation. That's the second main event. The third main event, verses 22 through 33, we see the apostles are caught in a storm. This follows Jesus feeding, miraculously feeding over 5,000 people. And we read in verse 22 that Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and go before him to the other side. Verse 23, Jesus sends the multitudes away and then he goes up into a mountain to pray. And then in verse 24, the scene shifts back to the apostles in that boat. And they are in the midst of the sea. John says in John 6, verse 19, that they were about 5 and 20 or 30 furlongs out. That's about 3.5 miles. They were about halfway. They're right in the middle of the lake. They are in a place of vulnerability. And then the account goes on to tell of an extraordinary, a very extensive and broad wind of immense portion. A storm that was bigger than them, a storm that was beyond their ability to handle or to escape. So there they are in the midst of the sea. Everywhere is the storm, everywhere is the wind. Everywhere is the waves. There's no place to turn. They're in the middle of this sea. The wind is opposing them. The waters are rising violently. Their boat is being tossed. And Mark tells us in his account, in Mark 6:48, that they were toiling. That is, they were exerting themselves, using a tremendous amount of effort and energy, striving and struggling in rowing, trying to get to shore. So there they are, caught in this storm. By this time, they are physically, they are mentally exhausted and drained. The sea is still unsettled, agitated, violent, chaotic. All was seemingly out of control, and they are struggling again with, they're struggling against the storm, they're straining at the oars, they're making no headway. They're not getting anywhere. And again, it's dark. And they're alone. Jesus is up in the mountain, unbeknownst to them. And basically, they're just holding on, desperately trying to keep from going under. That's why they're toiling. in rowing. The surrounding winds and their waves were an opposing force. It was a great obstacle. And it was a great difficulty to these apostles. It was a time of great peril. In fact, it was a life-threatening storm. And they were stuck in it. And then the fourth event is verses 34 through 36. The chapter closes with Jesus and the disciples. Jesus calmed the storm, by the way. And then Jesus and the disciples arrived safely in the land of Gennesaret. And when they did, the people brought their loved ones who were sick, many of them infected and afflicted, infirm in many different ways, disabled in many different ways, plagued. And these people came with all these diseased individuals, and they pleaded with Jesus Christ that these sick people would be able to, that they would be allowed to just touch the hem of his garment. And we read in verse 36, as many as touched were made perfectly whole. That's the fourth main event. So these four events and all the events within them, they are pictures. They are pictures of trials. They are pictures of difficulties. They are pictures of hardships. They are pictures of struggles and afflictions and adversities and burdens and stresses and just the obstacles of life. And these come, of course, in many forms. They come in many forms. And they are of varying degrees. And they are also of varying duration. But in these four events, we see the tremendous neediness of mankind. And the great variety of need among mankind. And we also see the insufficiency of man in these times of need. All of that is brought out very clearly in the chapter. So you have four events. Within these four events, many other events. Also in this chapter, there are a variety of places. There are a variety of emotions and feelings. We see there's a prison. John was imprisoned before he was beheaded. So there's a prison. There's a graveyard. The disciples came and buried the body of John. So there's a prison. There's a graveyard. There's a desert. This is a desert place. There's a sea. There's a boat. There's an evening. And at the end of the chapter, there's a town. They arrive in Gennesaret. And also in the events of the chapter, there's a lot of emotion. The chapter opens with hatred. Hatred toward John the Baptist. John the Baptist is beheaded. There's heartbreak. There's sorrow. As you go on and you see there's anxiety, there's fear, there's frustration. There's also joy. And there's faith. And there's doubt. We see that on Peter's part. And also in the events of the chapter, there are many needs. There are the needs of comfort. There are the needs of assurance and rest and courage and cheer. There is the need of rescue. There is the need of healing. So in this chapter, there are a variety of happenings or occurrences in a variety of places, producing a variety of emotions and a wide range of needs. That's life. But in it all, there's Jesus. And He's the main theme. He's the one we must not lose sight of. In all of this, there's Jesus. He's the main subject of the chapter. In the chapter, He is the one who makes a difference. In all four events, He is the one who made the difference. The disciples didn't make the difference. The multitudes didn't make the difference. It was Jesus that made the difference in the happenings, in the place where the happenings happened, in the emotions of the people, in the needs of the people. It was Jesus who made the difference. Again, the heading over the chapter could be Jesus, all-sufficient, always sufficient in all things. That could be one heading over the chapter. Or you could put the heading, the supremacy and dominion of Jesus Christ. That would also be a fitting heading. Or you could put the heading, Jesus is the answer and the remedy. Also very fitting. Or you could put, Jesus is right for what is wrong in lives. Also very fitting. Or you can put, Jesus is greater than. You could go on and on. But what my point is this, it's all about Him. It's all about Jesus. And as you read the chapter, there is Jesus. There He is. Everywhere you turn, there He is. In the first event, the murder of John the Baptist. After the disciples buried the body of John, it says that they went and they told Jesus. And Jesus proved to be greater than their sorrow. He proved to be greater than their heartache. He was the remedy to what they needed. He was the remedy to their situation. And He was what they needed. That's why they went to Him. In the second event, the feeding of a vast multitude with a few loaves and fishes, Jesus was greater than their meager means, and He was the answer to their meager means, and He was what they needed in the situation. In the third event, the life-threatening storm, Jesus was greater than the sea, He was greater than the wind, He was greater than the waves, and He was greater than all the fear and all the anxiety that they were feeling. We have the wonderful declaration in verse 25, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. What a sight! Someone walking on storm-tossed waters. What appeared to be the destruction of the disciples, Jesus was walking on it. That happens all the time. Those violent storm-tossed waters that were working against the disciples, that were tossing their boat about, wreaking havoc and disruption in their lives, causing so much fear, causing so much turmoil, and threatening their lives. There's Jesus. The storm has no effect upon Him. It never does. It never does. He walks upon the waters as if they were dry land. The wind and the waves are tossing their boat here and there, but look at Him. Look at Him. He's calm. Look at him as he walks on the water. He's going toward them. He's never moved off his path by the storm. Never. He's in control. He's not shaken. He's not bothered by the wind. He's not bothered by the waves. He was walking majestically and triumphantly upon the storm. He is declaring to them, he is showing them, I am the master of the storm. Jesus was not only greater than the storm, he was the answer to the storm. And that's so today. Whatever your need, whatever your impossible situation is, Jesus is not only greater, he's the answer. He was also the one they needed in the storm. You know, many times we misidentify our needs. We say, well, I just need such and such to happen. No, you need Christ. That's true of all of us, saved or lost. What we need in any event of life is Him. That's what we need. Jesus was greater than the storm. He was the remedy to the storm. Then you come to the fourth event, the healing of the disease. And Jesus not only was greater than the lameness and the paralysis and the blindness and the deafness and the fever and the plagues, he was the remedy. He was what every one of those people needed. Healing was not really what they needed. What they needed was Him. And the healing came through Him. So all through the chapter, there's Jesus. And as you read the chapter, you see several things about Him. He was seen. He was seen. All the events of life, we need to see Him. Not only was he seen, he was heard. He spoke, and they heard. He was available. In every single one of these events, he was available. And he could be reached. He could be approached. So it is today. But notice his availability. Or verse 12. They went and told Jesus. He's available. In verse 18, Jesus said to them concerning their meager and insufficient means, bring them to me. Again, he's approachable. In verse 25, Jesus went unto them. Jesus went unto them. In verse 29, we hear Jesus say, come. And also in verse 29, and when Peter was come down out of the ship to go to Jesus. You see, he's approachable all through the chapter. In verse 32, Jesus came into the ship. And in verse 35, the people brought unto him. So you have various places. You have various occurrences. And there's Jesus. He's greater than all the places. He's greater than all the occurrences. He's the remedy. He's the answer. He's the one they needed. And in every situation, in every place, he could be approached. What a blessing. What a wonderful, wonderful blessing. Because Jesus was there, because he was accessible, they were able to have rest and fellowship. When John the Baptist was beheaded, the disciples went and told Jesus. They went and told him of John's death, how he died, and they went and told him that we have buried his body. In Mark's account, in Mark 6:31, Jesus responded by saying unto them, "Come ye." They've already gone to him, but he says, "Come." In other words, come a little closer. "Come yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while." Because Jesus was there, there was rest. And we read in John 6, verse 3, John's account. And I got stuck on this week. There's a message coming on this. "And there he sat with his disciples." What a picture. There he sat with his disciples. Because Jesus was there, they could sit with him. I can't think of anybody better to sit with than the Lord. They could hear his instruction because Jesus was there. When the multitudes gathered and there wasn't enough food and it was supper time, Jesus says, "Bring them to me." "Lord, what would you have us to do? All we have is five loaves and a few fishes." He said, "Bring them to me." That's what we need to do. Bring what you have to Jesus. And I guarantee you it's more in his hand than it is in yours. There was courage and peace to be had because Jesus was there. Verse 27, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." Because Jesus is there in all these events, in all these places, in all these emotional needs, there was comfort. There was courage. He was the answer. He was the answer to their unsettledness. He was the answer to their distress. He was the answer to their turmoil. Also, because Jesus was there and because Jesus was accessible, they had opportunity upon opportunity to draw near unto them, unto him. And they did so following the murder of John the Baptist. They went and told Jesus. And again, Jesus said, "Come." Jesus said to Peter, "Come." And Peter stepped out of the boat and walked on the water. There was, because Jesus was there, there was victorious overcoming of the events. Whatever the event, whatever the occurrence, whatever the place, whatever you're feeling, Jesus is there, and therefore it's possible to have victory. Because he's there. And we see it all through the chapter. Because Jesus was there, there was a moving toward him. The disciples moved toward him after the death of John. When Jesus said, "Bring them hither to me," what did they do? They moved toward him. Peter walked on water to go to Jesus. So in all the events of life, in all the occurrences of life, whatever the place, whatever we're feeling, we can move toward him because he's there. That's the best thing to do in any situation. I don't care what other solutions people come up with. Nothing can top that. Move in the direction of the Lord. You cannot go wrong. There was sparing. Remember, Peter began to sink. "Lord, save me." And the Lord stretched out his arm and saved them. Verse 31 tells us that the Lord stretched forth his hand. We need to see that too in all the events and circumstances of life. The outstretched hand of Jesus. We need to see that. We need to notice that. We need to recognize that. There's the outstretched hand of Jesus. And if there is the outstretched hand of Jesus, which way should my hand be going? Toward His. That's the very same hand, by the way, that made a path in the Red Sea. The very same hand that sheltered Moses and that smashed the walls of Jericho. The very same hand that brought healing to the leper, and to the blind, and to the deaf, and the paralytics. It's the same hand that multiplied the loaves and the fishes. And that hand is stretched out toward us. What a blessing. And I believe that's so in the events of life. There was pleading with Him. He was there and they could plead with Him. And so it is with you and I. So by way of application, our lives, of course, are made up of many happenings. I mean, most of us here, perhaps all of us, we don't know, but by simple math, most of us have lived most of our lives. Most of our days are behind us, not ahead of us. There have been a lot of happenings. I mean, you start viewing your life. A lot happens in a life. A lot happens. Even if you just sit in the house, a lot happens in a life. And there are a variety of places. They consist of a wide range of emotions. By the time you live your life, you'll have expressed just about every, you'll express every emotion there is. And there's many needs. Oh, if we only knew how many needs the Lord has fulfilled in our lives. Our lives can go from one end of the spectrum to the other. But there's Jesus. Can go from one end to the other, but there He is. It can change from one place to another, but there He is. He's always there. And no matter what is happening, or the place where it is happening, and no matter how we may be feeling, and whatever our needs might be, or we think they might be, because He is there, we can move toward Him. Seems to me that would be the wise thing to do. Because He is there, we can tell Him. Seems to me that would be the wise thing to do. Don't have to get on Facebook and tell everyone. Tell Him. Because He's there, we can sit with Him. We can sit with Him. We can hear His declaration. It is I. How many times you and I have heard Jesus say, "It is I. It is me." Those are wonderful times. And we can hear His invitation. Come. And I believe in every event in your life, whatever place it happens, if you listen, you will hear Jesus say, "Come. Come." There's the answer. Draw near unto Him. Peter walked with Him on the water. Because He is in the event, we can walk with Him. We can experience His peace. We can experience His overcoming power. We can experience His grip upon us. Remember, the Lord stretched forth His hand and caught Peter. He laid hold of him. And Peter felt it. And in all the events of life, oh, to feel His grip upon us, His overcoming power. And they worshipped Him in the boat. and all the events of life, wherever it is. We're to worship him. And then it says, when they went over to the other side, in other words, they completed the journey. No better way to complete the journey than with him. And then there were multitudes who were allowed to touch him and to receive his power and have wholeness. And as many as touched were made perfectly whole. These can be our everyday experiences. And let me tell you something. If it's not, it's not because Jesus isn't there. The problem's not with him. The problem's with us. The problem's not with anybody else. Well, I could have, but so-and-so said such and such. That, get over it. That has nothing to do with it. Jesus is there. He's the answer. He's the remedy. How thankful we ought to be. Because whatever may be happening in your life right now, whatever your place, maybe a prison, maybe a desert, maybe a boat, could be anywhere. Wherever your place, whatever your emotions, well, I feel such and such. Well, that's fine. Whatever may happen tomorrow, in whatever place you might find yourself in tomorrow, you need to hear those words, be of good cheer, it is I. You need to realize Jesus is there, and he's what I need. He's who I need. He has what I need. The problems, the troubles, the difficulties, the trials, the struggles. You can't get through life with it without these things. They're going to happen. The needs, the perplexities, the fears, they're all real. Even if you imagine them in your mind, they're still real to you. They're all real, but nothing is more real than this. It is I. There's nothing more real than that. It is I. As real as your storm may be, as real as your need may be, it is not as real as it is I, Jesus Christ. We need to hear those words over and over. It is I. It is I. Be of good cheer. Again, our country's in terrible, terrible, terrible turmoil. Terribly dangerous times. And we need politics is not the answer. It is I. We need to hear Jesus say, be of good cheer, it is I. Be not afraid. It is I. So again, what a wonderful chapter. It's all about Jesus in the wide range of events in our lives. And you think about your life, and you think about some of the events of your life, and thank God. Thank the Lord. He is the one who brings us through all the events. You know, people will say all the time, I don't think I can get through this. Well, you've gotten through other things worse. You can get through it. You won't get through it on yourself by yourself, but you can get through it. But you need to have your eyes upon him, because he's the answer. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.